Second down and 7 from the 15-yard line. Play fake. Manning looks, and he's going to get swapped. Ball's out. The ball is on the ground. Let's see who comes. It is still loose. It's recovered by somebody in the end zone. Let's see who's got it. Jacksonville's recovered. That's a touchdown for the Jaguars. The ball was loose. Jacksonville recovered it. Touchdown, Jags. Straight drop. Manning steps up, fires it out to the right flat. He's got his tight end. But well, ball's on the ground. The ball's on the ground. It's picked up by Aaron Coleman. Aaron Coleman up the left sideline.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All Ryan O is here from the Florida Times Union, everybody. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We are set for Santa Clara. San Francisco, Santa Clara, the whole nine yards. We're ready for Super Bowl 50. That includes Tyler Devitt, who gets to make
the trip. Whoa! Let's go.
He's ready.
Ryan, will you be there? Are you going to be there, Ryan?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, now that he knows you're coming. Are you kidding me?
Book now, baby.
We're coming. We're flying out on the 31st of January and making a week of it out there in Santa Clara. Radio Row is like right in the heart of downtown San Francisco. Is it Moscone or Moscone Center? I don't know how you
something
pronounce
like
it. Moscone is their big
I wonder if you guys
convention
will,
center area.
Like last year, I wonder if you guys will be burrowed 200 feet into the ground.
Yeah, that was an odd setup.
It really
that they
was.
Had.
Take you, 6 escalators, then take a right.
You guys always, like, one of the great perks of going to cover the Super Bowl for a schlub like me is free sodas everywhere, right? I mean, they got those Pepsi machines, yeah. And they set them to where you don't need money. You just push the button, and it comes out all the time. And they didn't put any on our floor, right? We had to go up into, sneak into the writer's area where they don't like the unwashed masses of broadcast coming because we're distracting them from the real work that's being done.
Which the fact they still have a room that big.
It's immense, right, for the writers? And they're usually like 10 guys
there. I won't write one story in that room the whole week.
No, you'll be on your laptop and wherever you're going, yeah.
The big fella needs the TV on.
That's probably what it is. I'm sure that's what it is. All right, let's get to the, as Hicken described, the elephant in the room, the elephant on Twitter on Sunday after the football game. Ryan O'Halloran's exchange with Chris Clemens, and people were calling me Monday saying, what do you think about it? I hadn't talked to you at that point in time. Just in your words, just tell us what happened.
Real quick, I was in the locker room talking to Devon House. The locker for listeners, the locker room on the road divided by sections, DBs, D linemen, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm in the middle of talking to House. First walk by, blah, 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 blah. He's going to make stuff up. Don't trust him, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, whatever. And Devon was like, so what? Let's keep talking. Because I was asking him, how would you what kind of suggestions would you give for this defense
and to get better for
next
year.
Yeah, get better. And do you think you're a leader? But okay, we keep talking. And another pass by. You're the D head of the
this
group.
Is Chris Clemens walking
yeah, yeah,
by.
Yeah, yeah, another walk by. And we continue talking. Another walk by. And then walks by again. And that's when I say, have fun getting cut.
Well, now the tweet that got everyone's attention, I think, is that you reported that Clemens said that the Jaguar media is racist.
Yeah, and of course he denied saying that, but anybody who's been in this locker room will say one of his go-to lines is white man media keeping the black man down. He went up to one of our interns last year, intern, who was in the locker room doing a story on Michael Bennett, looks him right in the face and says, you don't belong in here because you're a white boy. Okay, so consider the source. My thing is when I'm talking to a player, don't interfere. That's what pissed me off. So, I tweeted that out because I was ticked off. And the day that we get ripped for not backing down is the day we should all go home because I'm not going to back down.
I didn't have any issue with you reporting anything that's said in an open locker room setting. Yeah. It's an open locker room setting. These guys have been around. He's not a rookie. You guys haven't got along, or was there something specific? Is there a story?
No. That's the thing is, I've given him his space. and because it's useless to go there to that locker. So, so this came, you know, basically I've reported the truth is that he's the only guy who's got a Veterans Day off this year. He's gotten star treatment, even though he's not a star, and he hasn't produced. A lot of facts there.
Well, could it be that, and I don't know this to be the case, but could it be that he kind of negotiated that, like saying, hey, you know what, I'll come back for another year. Maybe I'm thinking about hanging it up, but well, if I'm going to come back, you got to, you know, do it within certain guidelines.
Regardless of that, the fact is he's the only one that got it. So I've pointed that out. Players are going to get away with as much as they can for as long as they can. You know, if he's allowed to take it, fine. So I've basically have predicted that he's not going to be back. He didn't dispute that tweet.
Well,
it's a 2-year deal, so whatever.
2-year deal. He's been here for 2 years. I think you're probably accurate on that score.
That's it.
All right.
So
yeah, well, people were wondering, like, you know, what all became of that, and that's basically it, kind of like what you reported.
But my thing is if I would have went to his locker and started talking to him and got a blowback, I probably asked for it. Yeah.
Why? Because you know that he's not open to talking.
Because you know, I'm inviting the scorn if I want to try and go interview him, which is usually I got better guys to talk to, but when you're purposely interfering with somebody I'm talking to, then that's what gets me.
Now, and I'll say this: you've been in the locker rooms around the league for years, right? And I
first time that's ever happened.
Okay, but there is. For that may have happened, but you know there are guys that yell and interrupt. You know what I mean? In a joking way.
Yeah.
I don't think you mean like if somebody come in, because we see it all the time. Guys are doing a camera shot, and teammates will come in and start making faces and doing things like that. You know, so it wasn't as much the fact that he was saying anything or the content of what he was saying.
Oh, totally content,
right? Because totally. I mean, if he was joking around saying "Hey, house," you know, "you pretty boy," or I mean, whatever. I mean, he's still interrupting you.
I got disappointed every time one of the receivers came over and said, "Hey, you know, make sure you credit this guy." Well, we would never get anything done,
right?
You know, and so, but yeah, it's
all right. Well,
so it's
just wanted to get, you know, get it from the source.
Yeah. I knew I was going to come in and address it, so it's you know, we're going to go from there.
All right.
But I have other talking points about the last couple of days, so we'll get to those now.
We will definitely talk about the last couple of days and what's gone down with the Jaguars. Bob Babich getting let go by Gus Bradley yesterday. We'll hear from Gus on whether or not he thinks he will call plays, the new defensive coordinator will call plays, and along those lines, we asked you your opinion. Should Gus Bradley just call the Jags defensive plays, or should he hire a defensive coordinator and turn it over to him? And, you know, part of that, there are various stages in between. You could promote a defensive coordinator. Todd Wash has been mentioned as a possibility, and maybe call plays or promote Todd Wash and give him the ability. So how do you the question is really, how do you think Gus Bradley should handle the defensive coordinator opening, and who should have the responsibility? So the feedback today we're looking for, you can send it to us at MD_1010XL on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page is up and going. 641-1010, both the phone in line and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. If you'd like to participate in the program and talk about any aspect of Jaguar football, open up the phone lines to you coming up. We'll hear from Gus Bradley, his conference call yesterday to discuss the dismissal of defensive coordinator Bob Babich and where Ryan thinks the Jaguars go this offseason. As Happy New Year, O'Halloran.
Hey.
It's a brand new 2016.
Hey, Tyler, let's make this an all JT Thursday.
Oh,
let's
do it. Calling his shot right there. All right, let's see if we can get that done. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you on this Thursday live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah.
Name that tune.
What goes with it?
Okay, I'll take your word for it. You could have said a flower pot full of dirt. I would have said, yeah. Ryan O'Halloran knows this is Justin Timberlake. I have no idea.
That white guys like Justin Timberlake.
Is that what it is? Easy now. I think he's a fine comedic actor. Beyond that, I couldn't really tell you a whole lot. If you want to get in today, 641-1010. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up. His comments, brief as they were yesterday, about the release or the fact that Bob Babich got fired. Defensive coordinator opening yet to be filled, and we'll see how the process plays itself out. What is your thought? Do you think, if you're handicapping it right now, more likely that Gus goes outside the organization to hire somebody new, elevate somebody, and has kind of part, you know, shared responsibility, or elevate somebody and says, basically, you're on your own, much like Bob Babich was.
I think plan A right now is to go outside.
Okay.
Because Enke realizes they need a fresh voice, fresh ideas, and that person would call the plays.
And would then, because Lovie Smith has often in the past run a lot of Tampa 2, but he's modified that over the years. I've been doing a little bit of research on him, and he does run multiple sets, much like Gus talks about his offense, or defense, excuse me, wanting to be multiple. Would Gus be open, in your opinion, to a guy coming in and saying, hey, I see what you're doing here, but I don't like this, I don't like this. Would it be like, here's the defense, you run it?
Yeah, that's, to me, when all this gets done, that's what will be interesting to ask.
The big question,
his take,
right?
Is, okay, Mike, you're hired as defensive coordinator from another organization. Okay, how much did Gus say you were allowed to change the scheme? Because he believes in this defense.
Right.
And he thinks that these players play specific roles. That's why they're brought in. So if I'm a new coordinator and I'm interested in this job, the thing I'm going to ask is, okay, A, am I calling plays? Okay, if I am, okay, then I'll continue talking. Next is, okay, I want to do this, this, and this. Will you support me in this? That's what we're going to find out, because I think ultimately it's going to be plan A is bringing a guy from outside who will call the plays, who will put his stamp on the defense, but it won't be a complete overhaul like it was on offense last year. Plan B, I think, is promote from within, give that person the play calling duty. Plan C is some kind of arrangement where Gus calls the plays. Because you could just tell the last two times he talked, which was Monday and Wednesday, that while I oughta type of thing. But he's not going to, because I think he has his hands full with the organization, you know, motivating, culture, et cetera, managing the game, that maybe he feels like it's too much.
All right. Ryan O'Halloran here with us. 641-1010 is the phone number. Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today. Jerry is out at the beaches, and he leads off on Jaguars today this morning. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Hey, MD, Ryan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Ryan, I think you're closer to it than I am, but I think Gus Bradley would be foolish to get any, you know, number one, we all know that he's playing for his job next year. He's coaching for his job next year. If I'm a former defensive coordinator head coach now, I'm putting it on my shoulders, and I'm going to coach the defense. And you know what? If being a head coach and a D coordinator at the same time is too much on his shoulders, then he probably doesn't need to be a head coach.
Well, that's a good point, and I would probably, if it was me, that's what I'd tell Gus.
You said that a couple weeks ago. Yeah. You said, Gus, put your hands on this defense and go down with your philosophy and with as much control as you can have.
You know, and that means I would bring in promote or bring in a coordinator with the understanding, okay, you're in charge of presenting the plan to the players. You're going to have a lot of input on what goes into the plan, but I'm calling the shots on Sunday because this is it. I have to, you know, desperate times, desperate measures. So that's what I would do, Jerry. But I think most likely he'll go another direction.
I mean, because you see, like, Mike Zimmer got the job up in Minnesota, and we've referenced this several times in the last few weeks. He came in and said, I'm going to call the defense, so at least my team knows that there's something I'm expert at, you know, I'm really good at, and that I feel like that's my strength, so that's going to be my role on game day.
And also, if you're Gus and if you hire a coordinator from outside and give them play calling, you've painted yourself into a corner. If things aren't going well the first five games, you're probably not going to strip him of the play calling duties five games into his tenure. So by the time game 11, game 12, you feel you need to take it over, it's probably too late and everybody's going to get fired anyways.
Jerry, thank you for the call. Both of you guys, do you think that it's going to be more difficult with the situation as it is? Gus Bradley's 12-36. I know Dave Caldwell said we're going to really count those first 2 years.
Well, let's get into that.
We'll in a moment. All right, but you come in, you got to feel like Gus is on the hot seat, right?
Yes.
So, how is that going to limit his options? Is a guy now a guy like Lovie Smith might say, "Hey, you know, I just want to work for a year, keep my foot in the game, and then try to get back in the head coaching cycle next
work
year."
Work for Marone.
Right, exactly. So you think it's not going to be necessarily a turnoff that the head coach may not be around if he doesn't succeed. Now, look, he may win 10 games this year, and all this is a moot point. He gets a contract extension, and that's what we hope happens. But it, given the reality of the circumstance as it stands today, will it limit his options?
I think it will. I think the Lovie Smith door, that Lovie Smith scenario where you give a guy a soft landing for a year, I think that's definitely something you should consider because, you know, if a guy, let's say Lovie Smith comes here for a year and is defensive coordinator and everybody gets cleaned out, Lovie Smith's going to say, all right, I'll just go work somewhere else.
Right.
Where I think it's going to be tough to hire a guy is somebody who has options and who has a couple teams going after him. You know,
would think Lovie would have some options.
He's going to have some options, but I'm talking more of a guy who was who hasn't been a head coach.
Okay.
That is looking at his big chance. Let's say you're a linebackers coach and want to be a coordinator.
You want to pick the right spot that you're going to be there for 3 or 4 years at least.
You don't want to be one and done because that's going to reflect on you. You may not get another shot as a coordinator. So, you know, it's a delicate dance, and ultimately where I think Gus goes is the retread route. A guy who's been a coordinator at one or two or three places, who can come in, who can adjust his scheme to what the Jaguars want to do, and instead of going after a guy with no coordinator experience.
Tony, what do you think? Is it going to – I mean, if you're Lovie Smith or an up-and-coming guy like Ryan suggested, do you think that limits your options or your interest level with those guys?
I think it has to, just because you don't know – the status of that coach going forward. So for a guy who's going to be doing it for the first time, I think it would be difficult to take that job, knowing that you basically have no security beyond the first year. I am curious with, you mentioned it, Ryan, this defense is, you have guys for spots, and it's very specific roles for all these guys, and it makes me wonder how much flexibility they can even have scheme-wise going forward with whoever's going to come in. Even if Lovie wanted to come in and change some things, I'm not saying they were very effective with the roles that they had this year.
You should change everything. Nothing's working.
Right, yeah. But they have guys that they brought in to be this guy. Can they turn away from that here 3 years into this process?
Well, I think that's where the current disconnect is. You know, on Tuesday, Dave Caldwell was asked that very question. Is, okay, how much of a change would that be? He says, well, I think, you know, Paul Posluszny, Jared Odrick,
can play multiple systems.
What they did rule out, which was pretty smart, would be a 3-4, which would call for a total radical change of positions and personnel. Let's say assume you're staying at a 4-3. From a player's perspective, they're saying, hey, I was brought in to do this. It may be different if I was asked to do something different. And Gus has sort of been on that side too. So I think that's what they got to get ironed out is how do they want to be on defense? Okay, can this guy do more of this? Can they change roles? How about if they went – if you can't find your free safety, they might as well play Tampa 2. They might as well play more coverage because right now you don't have a guy that can play the sideline safety spot. So, you know, if you do more cover 2, then that opens up some other things.
If he was available, where would Eric Berry rank among your interested, targets?
I'd probably be at the top.
Yeah, for me too.
You know, because you can – it's very – they've talked for 3 days here how tough it is to find a free safety to play their system. Well, then either you need to overspend to find it or you need to change your system. So if he hits the market, that's where you pay 150 cents on the dollar, blow everybody else out of the water, take the criticism. I don't care about the criticism. That's why you've stunk. You have cap space. Take advantage of
Nobody criticizes him as a player. He's a phenomenal player. He's versatile. He plays strong and free. He's in that age range that you want, going into that second big contract. He's been a hard worker. The guy overcame cancer and came back and made it to the Pro Bowl in his first full year back. So, I like you, though, think that there's no way in hell Kansas City's got like $35 million in cap room projected. There's no way in hell they're not re-signing that guy.
And two things, if I'm Eric Berry, team stood by me.
Absolutely.
And so if everybody says he's not going to take a hometown discount, well, he doesn't have to. I think he's probably pretty loyal to the team for the way that they supported him. So I think that is another obstacle. But from the Jaguars' perspective, what you also have to identify is, do you want specific strong, specific free? Because for 3 years they've bragged about how they like interchangeable guys. That hasn't worked. So do you need to shift your thinking on true free to play center field and a true strong to just play near the line of scrimmage? So – you know, if you go interchangeable again, that means to me is they are still trying to throw at a moving target.
Yeah, well, to me, though, in terms of that, if you want to sign Berry and say you're the free safety, I'd have no issue with that.
I think that's what they should do if, let's say, they draft Jalen Ramsey. He's a free. okay, that I think that would help your strong safety spot, because let's say you sign Barry or draft Ramsey. He's your free. You tell James Sample you're now back to your strong safety spot, and you're competing with Cyprian.
Or if James Sample, if your best lineup proves to be Cyprian at strong, Sample at free with Jalen Ramsey playing corner, because he's played a bunch of corner. I mean, you've got options, but I know what you're saying. Figure out what the best set of options is and then lock in with that, right, and focus on your role.
Well, you are also correct, though, is this defense hasn't been very flexible because they don't have the players that can play multiple spots. You look at the safeties they currently have on this roster, you can't put them on a slot. You can't put them outside. You know, if you get a guy like Ramsey who can do that, okay, that allows you to play maybe more dime, more base nickel, because you have some physical guys. You know, would you mind having three safeties on the field if they're Ramsey playing free and then Sample and Cyprian basically playing a hybrid? It gives offenses something to think about, because every Wednesday when we have these coaches' conference calls, the opposing coach, it doesn't mean they insult the Jaguars, but they say, well, they don't run a lot of stuff, but they try and play fast. Well, to me, that means you're vanilla and we've figured them out.
Right.
So they have to become more multiple in what they do.
You know, one thing with Lovie Smith, going back to him for a second, his defense is traditionally, and I granted, again, in reading up, he's tweaked it over the last couple of years somewhat in Tampa, but the weak side linebacker turns into a star, okay? And the middle linebacker, though, has a lot of coverage responsibilities.
That's where the problem would be.
That would, as currently constituted, yeah, that would probably be an issue right now, but it's not an ideal world either. You can't flip the entire roster on that side of the football, and I think Paul Posluszny is, you know, when you're ranking your problems on defense, is probably not in the top five on that side of the football. Yeah. You've got other things to concern yourself with. But something intriguing, though, with Lovie Smith being out there on the market. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of what Dave Caldwell had to say earlier in the week that got you going. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley yesterday as he announced the firing of Bob Babich, the Jags' now former defensive coordinator. Two coordinators in the last 2 years getting waved out the door. Of course, last year, wildly successful hire of Greg Olsen, in my opinion. Yeah, he ran the 32nd ranked offense in Oakland. Sure as hell got the passing game going here in Jacksonville. A lot of work to be done still in the running game, but definitely a big step in the right direction. Can they hit a home run on the defensive side of the football? We will find out. The question of the day, should Gus Bradley take control, in your opinion, of the defensive play calling, or should he look outside and hire a defensive coordinator and turn it over to him or somewhere in between? Give us your reaction to that at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, and at 1010XL, Fat Tony on Twitter. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey! Title of the song, please. Name that tune.
You had it on the tip of your tongue.
Love Stone.
Yep.
He's so pleased with himself, man. Are you any good, like, in trivia in general, or are you just more JT trivia?
No, like music and sports and movie trivia. I mean,
you good at movie trivia?
Trivia about nothing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, all trivia is kind of about nothing, isn't it? Hence the word trivial and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it, like, Tony. I think in a fair setting, I want to take on these chumps from the drill. Now, I hear every week with their hemming and hawing on their Get Smart John segment, could be red, could be the color. Huh, John? Any verbal hints from you as to whether that should be our final answer? You guys are on the right path. Red! Red's the final answer. Correct. Another perfect game for the drill. I think we could take them, Tony. But we need a full compliment, because they've got McKenzie, right? The thrill, as they call her. They've got Beefer, who is Beef's a dangerous entry into the whole trivia realm, because he's very good on the useless, you know, entertainment trivia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would count on you to cover Beef in that category. Are you in his category?
Maybe.
He's a tough out.
I can tell you, there was about a three-year span where I played trivia with a group of friends, you know, every week, basically. And anytime there was a movie or sports question, they just looked at me. Like, it was just like, they were like, okay, this is Tony's stuff. Like, anything that was geography, don't even bother.
No?
I don't know. I don't know where anything is. I don't know the capitals of anything. I'm pathetic at that stuff.
It's a great bonding thing, because I remember it just – sparked my memory here. It's like my second or third week at Kansas State when I started going there. And I went to the sports trivia thing, and I was like one of like three or four people who made it the final. And I became friends with those couple people the rest of the time I was there.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I was kind of, plus, we were all like in the journalism department, whatever. But
Tyler Devitt, do you have a strength? Do you have any go-to categories that you would be able to assist and fill in the gaps for
Indiana
us?
Indiana basketball.
That's probably one of them.
The history of Gene Hackman in Hoosiers.
I definitely rule myself out from movies. You guys know that movies are my terrible category. It'd probably have to be like basketball history. That's maybe
basketball
a, like a
history.
Niche category, but
that's way too specific.
Who is George Mikan? All right, I'll put it on O'Halloran. O'Halloran, this will be fun. This will be a thrill for Super Bowl week. O'Halloran will be in charge of finding us a San Francisco establishment that puts on trivia. We'll go as a four-man power squad.
Hopefully they have fellowship and camaraderie.
Oh, are you kidding me? If there's not fellowship and camaraderie to be had, dirt. Not going to even bother. I got an interesting one here, I think, on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line for you, okay? Are you ready? Let me see if I can get this here. This was from the 904 area code, 327 prefix. It says, I remember reading the Times Union 3 years ago that Dave Caldwell used the Jags' existing scouting department for his first draft as a Jags GM because they're already in place doing the work, which, by the way, is a common practice when when a new general manager comes in, a new front office decision-making, drafting set of eyes comes in. They almost exclusively rely on the old regime scouting department because it's not the scouting department that makes the picks, but they've evaluated the players. You can't, at that point in January, start from scratch on that process.
Yeah, and most of these scouts' contracts run
through the draft.
That's why you see a lot of moves May 1st.
So the texter goes on, how much turnover has occurred in the Jags scouting department since then? Because we've been talking about the 2013 draft class didn't exactly end the season with a flourish, right? So the texter questions, is it possible the Jaguars' poor 2013 draft class can be blamed on Gene Smith's scouting department that was still in place during Caldwell's first year? I really have interest in O'Halloran's take on that.
Well, it's an interesting theory, and maybe some truth to that. What I remember talking to Dave Caldwell about that following summer is just how much work he had to do flying solo that draft because they put in their reports, et cetera, et cetera. But since that draft, you know, Chris Pullin came aboard, Kyle O'Brien, obviously John Idzik, and like three or four other scouts were hired after that draft. So almost 100%, I'd say by 80% turnover because Chris Driggers is still here, Tim Mingy's still here. So I think that's, I mean, if I would bring that up to Dave, he'd probably say that has nothing to do with it.
Right, he would not trying to blame somebody else for something that was ultimately his decision on who to pick.
But you look at those first three rounds, you know, if next week one is only Jokel's, you know, Jokel is obviously your left tackle, but is Cyprian still a starter? Is Gratz even on the roster?
In a scenario, Ryan, where let's say it goes someone trades up to number one, right?
I know where you're going.
I know you will, but I got to set it up for people who may not. Someone trades up to number one and takes a quarterback, okay? Whoever. Cleveland takes a quarterback at number two. Joey Bosa goes to San Diego, and Jalen Ramsey comes off the board.
Take Tunsil.
You would take Tunsil. All right, hooray, there's another person. Tony, where are you? We've kind of talked about this a little bit. Is he off the board for you because of defensive concerns?
No, he's not off the board.
Clearly the best player on your board at that point in time, would you consider pulling the trigger on
Tunsil? Yeah, and I'm actually watching the Texas A&M Ole Miss tape like during the game
draft
today.
Draft Nick, baby.
Because I wanted to watch Laramie Tunsil because I got the feeling that Tennessee's not going to be getting out of that number one pick and Tunsil's going to be the first name called at this year's draft. That's what I'm feeling right now is the most likely thing to happen. And I can tell you watching him, this dude is super athletic, like crazy athletic at the left tackle position with the stuff that he was being asked to do.
Peters, right. Who is a ridiculous athlete.
Yeah,
and
there's been a couple plays in this game already where Myles Garrett, who isn't the biggest guy, but is one of the best pass rushers in the SEC this year at Texas A&M, he's driven him 10, 15 yards downfield on play. So he's strong, he's athletic. If he's available at five, depending on what else is there for you, he's certainly a consideration.
And he can catch touchdown passes too.
Yeah.
I'll go on. Like, let's say if
see, trivia boy right here.
If you're the Jaguars, who would you rather have Tennessee take, Bosa or Tunsil?
That's a good question.
Who keeps you up at night then?
I think I'd rather have him take Tunsil because I think I prefer Bosa because he has been consistently graded as the top pass rusher for a long time that would be eligible to come out for this draft. Nothing has changed anyone's opinion on that. And I don't watch every Ohio State game week in, week out, but I've read a number of write-ups on him where he dominated. And, you know, no matter what the stats are at the end of the day, he creates plays for others. He draws double teams. He's system versatile. He could play left side, right side. To me, Bosa is a preferable choice, you know, because I think they're equal caliber prospects. And but I'm trying to come up with a scenario where the most attractive specific prospects for the Jaguars defensively may be off the board. You guys watch a Sugar Bowl this year, Ole Miss and Oklahoma State?
I watched some of it, yeah.
I didn't watch the Sugar Bowl, but reports are you heard of the guy, Emmanuel Ogba, right?
Yeah.
He's like considered a top 15 prospect, the defensive end. They said Tunsil just worked him.
Oh, yeah.
Worked him.
Tunsil didn't play the first 7 games of the year. He came back, he completely shut down Garrett against Texas A&M. He completely shut down Carl Lawson against Auburn, who was a guy that was considering coming out. He just announced he's going to go back to school for another year. And Ogba, who's a top 15 type pick they're being talked about right now, he just shut him down. I mean, there was nothing happening for that guy during the game. I think Tunsil's a really, really good prospect. And the idea of them putting something in front of Marcus Mariota where he's not getting hit, because you saw just glimpses of what that looked like when he had any time in the pocket, and he was really effective when he was given that. The idea of Tennessee putting a solid offensive line in front of him scares me, because I do think Marcus Mariota is a super, super talented guy.
Well, I think he's the most likely pick for the Titans at the moment. Now, this could change drastically, as we pointed out.
Well, especially if they hire a guy like McDaniels.
Why especially? Because he's with an offensive mindset. He wants to build up Mariota.
Yeah, and, you know, get that in place.
It makes sense. I mean, you want to give your franchise quarterback a chance to flourish, which is why Dave Caldwell has focused on that side of the football, not exclusively, but more so in the draft.
And, you know, it's easier to find some pieces on defense and free agency than a left tackle.
I would agree with that. But not pass rush.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, those are both super important positions. John Osier said on Monday he thinks the importance of the left tackle position is diminishing.
It's more of the level of talent that is playing the left tackle
that I can get on board with. But I don't think that, to me, the position is not diminishing. And I get that great pass rushers line up on the other side, but it's still the predominant blind side of 95% of professional quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, you look at Blake Bortles, who is probably one of the more athletic quarterbacks in the league. You don't have eyes in the back of his head.
No, and he got sacked a ton.
Yeah, and that's the reason why Jeremy Parnell's sack total allowed is lower than Luke Jokel's.
Right.
Is Parnell gave up a ton of pressures this year, but Blake saw it coming and was able to spin away.
Right.
Can't spin away. Left tackle is still a premium position.
You know, Jeff Logman was in here earlier this week, and we're talking about, you know, the offensive line. Obviously, Parnell's back as a starter, right? Linder's back at one of the guard spots, whichever one you want. Can is going to be in competition to start, certainly. Jeff thinks that Tyler Shatley will start somewhere on the offensive line next year. And I got the impression, Tony, that it was center that he feels is the most
likely
spot.
Sounds like he's going to get the shot at center.
Now, that may change completely if a guy like Alex Mack becomes available in free agency. He wants to revisit signing here like he did a couple of years ago with that offer sheet. What do you hear from the coaches about Shatley and how high they are on his prospects, and could he be a hidden gem they could uncover on the offensive line?
Well, he's definitely hidden because he hasn't played. I asked Gus this question last week because they've been talking up Shatley and Bowanko the whole season. I was like, it's great you're talking them up. I said, how can you tell they're getting better when you don't wear pads in practice?
And says, Bowanko's never active on game day.
Yeah, so, and Shatley played one offensive snap the whole year, and that was as that third tight end, fourth tight end the other day. So that's taking a risk.
What did he say to that? How did he
He said, well,
that?
You know, we do one-on-one drills, and, you know, it would have been easier if you said, you're right.
Well, but it's basically, it seems to me like it's a projection, right? Yeah. I mean, it's much like when you'd evaluate a prospect. You'd say, all right, let's see you in some drills. Let's see you at the Senior Bowl. Until you get in that live game action against that level of competition, you're never really going to know.
The thing that's been interesting, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, they're hinting around, and they're hinting on the record about this, is moving AJ Cann to center. They like his stoutness, the bowling ball. They feel he can handle the mental side of it because he's been in the offense for a year. If you put Cann there, then you, okay, if you're going to give Shatley a shot, would you prefer it be a guard? You know, so there's less things to do. So keep that in mind, that Cann could be a possibility.
All right. Definitely it's a possibility. And look, nobody, I don't think it's likely that they take Laramie Tunsil. And I don't think it's, if he's off the board, I'm not saying you'd force a pick at that position. I'm just saying I'm open to it. I'm open-minded to it. I would rather get a comparably graded pass rusher or maybe even a safety, but damn, I don't think the importance of that position is diminishing that much.
If a guy like that falls into your hands, take him.
I'm with you. All right, let's get Eric in Ponte Vedra up next, who wants to comment on Jonathan Cyprian, I believe. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
What's up?
Got a couple things to say. Wasn't disappointed at all this season. A little bit, but not too much. There's some very positive things. Cyprian definitely has the physique and the stoutness. He looks like a, you know, Pro Bowl player, but he just doesn't have the knowledge on the field. He had so many blown plays this season, and it's continuous. I don't think he got better. I think he got worse, to be honest with you. I think we need to address that position. Next question, will Fowler be the next Von Miller? And third is in the draft, we definitely need to go O-line and just shore that up. That makes everything better. Everyone plays better when the O-line's protecting well. That's it.
All right, Eric, thank you.
Let's go backwards here.
Yeah, we've touched on that.
I mean, if Tunsil's not there, you're probably not going to go O-line for a while. Plus, you don't know what they'll do in free agency. Cyprian, he led the team in missed tackles again this year. Was tied with Evans last year.
You know,
missed tackles, but his inconsistencies, his highs aren't as high as low as his lows are, if that makes any sense.
I would agree with that, right. It doesn't balance out, and a lot has been said about, well, they're asking him, they're putting too many coverage responsibilities because they don't have that free safety that they need to run this properly, but then you see him come up in a play that should be his forte. Hey, it's Alfred freaking Blue in the hole, and Alfred Blue just put him on his back, you know?
And there's just some things in coverage that as a third-year player you should be aware of. And Tony and Jeff mentioned just on the broadcast, that first touchdown to Grimes in the left flat.
Uh-huh.
He was like...
Right, he's looking at Grotz like, was it me, was it you? Yeah, there was a lot of uncertainty on that.
And then his Fowler question, you know, they're going to try his best to surround him with some good pass rushers. So the expectations are that he doesn't have to be Von Miller out of the gate because he's still coming off a major knee injury.
What would you say would be – I mean, it's tough to say. You could have 8 sacks but play like a Pro Bowl, or you could have, you know, 12 sacks and those be the only 12 plays you made all year.
The expectation for him coming in as a number one draft pick when he was healthy was that he'd get double digits.
10-sack guy in his first year.
You know,
but coming off a torn ACL,
you go,
don't know if that's reasonable to expect him.
Because what's his snap count going to be? Are they going to try and manage him a little bit?
Although, I mean, Ryan, it's going to be a, what, 16 months? You know, that's a...
That's where I totally agree with that. But I think they're going to get some guys, so the pressure's not all on him.
All right, here's Ryan O'Halloran along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues in a moment with this date in football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. More thoughts on Dave Caldwell, including his comments about not really counting the first 2 years of Gus Bradley's record against him, and some of the thoughts from Gus Bradley yesterday coming up as well on the announcement of the firing of defensive coordinator Bob Babich. This date in football straight ahead on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, on this date in football history, which is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, 1961, the first NFL Playoff Bowl was played on this date. Any guess as to what the NFL Playoff Bowl was, Tony Smith?
It was in what year?
1961, the NFL Playoff Bowl.
The Super Bowl champion play Notre Dame.
Good guess. Playoff Bowl, 1961. What you got, O'Halloran?
College All-Stars versus Green Bay Packers.
They did a lot of that stuff back then. It was actually the runner-up bowl for the two teams that lost to the teams that played for the championship to play, I guess, the third-place game. Detroit beat Cleveland 17-16 in 1962. The Western Division defeated the Eastern Division 47-27 in the first AFL All-Star game, which played before 21,000 in San Diego. They're hoping that wherever the Chargers end up, they draw more than 21,000 next year. 1986, the Bears completed their 15-1 regular season run to a championship by defeating the New England Patriots 46-10 in Super Bowl 20 at that time. Famous birthdays for this date: Eddie LeBaron, former Washington Redskin and Dallas Cowboy quarterback, born in 1930. He lived to be 85 years old, passed away last year, a four-time Pro Bowler. Bobby Engram, wide receiver for the Chicago Bears when I was growing up, 43 years old today. And Michael Sam, the first openly gay player to attempt to make the NFL and has yet to play a snap in the National Football League. And I don't even think he's playing in the CFL anymore, right? He walked away from
that.
Yeah,
I think he did.
Man, life was a little too busy for him. And also in this date in 1990, Joe Robbie passed away, former owner of the Miami Dolphins, passed away at the age of 73. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, you can visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers waited until yesterday to make a decision on whether they would retain head coach Lovie Smith or not. Lovie has been in Tampa for two seasons and was fired by the Bucs yesterday via a phone call. The common thinking is that the Bucs want to be able to keep Dirk Cutter, their offensive coordinator, and Jameis Winston together. Cutter was getting looks from other teams as a potential head coaching candidate. No word out of Tampa yet that their plan is to hire Cutter. At this point, it's just a theory in the wake of this seemingly strange decision by Tampa Bay. Detroit Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson released a statement through the team saying that he is, quote, evaluating options for his future. Johnson just finished his ninth NFL season, and it certainly sounds like he is seriously considering walking away from the game before he plays a 10th. The Denver Broncos announced today that Peyton Manning will start at quarterback for them in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs next weekend. And University of Florida safety Keanu Neal announced yesterday that he will be entering the NFL draft. Tony Pauline, who I'm sure we'll be talking to several times in the next month or two, had the following to say about Neal on DraftInsider.net. Quote, I was blown away by Neal's sophomore film and entering the season felt he was one of the most underrated defensive backs in the nation. So Florida's lost potentially somebody's gain in the National Football League.
Yes, you just made me think maybe we should have Tony Pauline on tomorrow, right? Talk a whole draft, lay the foundation out for some of these prospects. Tyler Devitt.
Let's do it.
Dial up Tony Pauline. Let's see if we can get him on board tomorrow. Love Tony Pauline. I got this one from Cabby that'll make you feel good. Hey, Mike, Rhino's very sharp in his observations of pro football. So are you and Fat Man Tony. Rhino's as sharp as the point on the head of a real rhino.
Hey!
That's there you go. Cool. Thank you, Cabby.
I like that guy.
Yeah, I know. The list is short, but there you have it. Let's see. A couple more, and then we'll get to the comments of Dave Caldwell here that you really seemed interested in commenting on yourself. Who do you think, if any, that Dave Caldwell offers a second contract to from the 2013 draft class?
I would say Jokel. Because they're easier to, you know, when you have a solid one or average one, it's, you might as well keep them.
You have a fifth-year option on him, yeah, too, right? So he's you have the ability to control him for two more seasons. Yeah. So you don't have to give him an extension. You can let this year play out and then say, okay, we're picking up that fifth-year option, and we have you under control for 2017.
Mm-hmm. But after that,
I mean, I think Cyprian has a chance, but he's got to earn it, right? I mean, he hasn't earned it.
And Cyprian has missed his first chance because he is eligible for an extension now.
Right.
But he's not going to get that.
If you're outside of the first round, once 3 years have gone by, you can sign that first contract extension coming off your rookie deal. You know, I've seen a lot of people saying Denard Robinson's gone. Get rid of him. Get rid of him. He laid the ball on the ground a bunch, but I don't see them getting rid of Denard.
No, he has a role on this team, but it's not as a number two tailback. He can be like a kick returner slash special team guy.
Hate to say offensive weapon, but just a versatile piece that you can sprinkle in here and there.
Insurance.
Yeah. So I mean, he does – look, he does have – there were times this year when you're eager to see more from Denard Robinson. You know, really running hard. He's got great burst. We know he's got the speed. But I don't know, Ryan, do you think he was pressing? You know, here it was, Yeldon's out. He figures, hey, here's my opportunity to show that I can handle a bigger, consistent workload myself if called upon. And is that what it was? I mean, ball security is something that, to me, lies solely on the player laying it on the ground.
Yeah, and you can't trust him then. He had cured that for most of this year and last year because of the hand injury. But, I mean, maybe he was trying to, get a 20-yard run when all it was there was six and he picked the wrong hole and made some bad decisions. So, I mean,
fighting for extra yardage,
yeah,
whatnot.
You found out what his role was. It's probably not as a main number two.
Here's one. Can you guys tell me what it is you see in Colvin? He's talked up as though he's on the level of Marcus Peters or even Malcolm Butler, yet we haven't seen anything from him outside of a couple of blitz sacks. I don't see the hype being justified. He still doesn't have his first career interception. First of all, I don't think he's talked on that level. I think people are excited about the potential that he has. Marcus Peters came in and probably defensive MVP of the Kansas City Chiefs this year. In fact, I think in ESPN's article today where they had all their beat writers pick the MVP for each team, the Kansas City guy, it might have been Teicher. I'm not sure who does it for ESPN. He picked Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
Eight interceptions, two pick sixes, and all you had to do was watch him play. He's one of those guys that you're like, oh, he passes the eyeball test with flying colors. What are your thoughts on where – Logman said he thought Colvin kind of took a step back as the season went on this year.
Yeah, I thought he would be more of an ascending player. They'll defend him by saying, well, he wasn't thrown at a lot. Well, I would say he probably played a little too soft to coverage, regardless of play call. I like him playing inside only in the future if they can get another guy to play outside, because I think he's fearless in run support, and it can be a very good blitzer if you move him around the line. So I think there's a roll on from this team, but if his goal was to tell the team, I'm going to definitely be your number two guy going into next year, I don't think he did that.
All right, because we keep alluding to it, let's get to the comment that I brought up, Dave Caldwell. In fact, Tyler, do we have that one handy? Can we play that comment from Dave Caldwell in discussing, you know, the record of Gus Bradley, how it keeps coming up, and how Dave Caldwell says you shouldn't really, or he doesn't, hold those first 2 years against him. Do we have that handy?
Give me 1 second here, okay?
All right. You let us know, Tyler Devitt, Hoosier fanatic, when we have that that cut. I did spring that one on it. But I just want to put it in context for people who may be listening in and didn't hear us discussing this yesterday when we went over. Go ahead.
Is it ready?
Yeah, it's ready.
Okay,
ready?
Go ahead.
All right, here, fire it away.
I don't hold Gus responsible for the first 2 years. I mean, that was tough. We didn't do anything free agent-wise of note our first year here, played a lot of rookies, and just kind of survived. Last year, we signed some free agents that kind of stopgap type of guys, but still were playing young guys, and I think we played 9 guys on offense that were rookies, and as you saw, paid dividends this year. It was more gearing towards this year and next year and the year after, and if you would have asked me 3 years ago, do you think you'll have a winning record by year 3, I wouldn't have been sold on that we would have.
Your thoughts?
I disagree. To me, it was admirable of him to say that. But only people who don't watch the tape, don't ask any questions, and just sort of listen to everything and believe everything that's said would believe that. I hold Gus complicit for these first 2 years because he struck out with his 2 coordinator hires. That set the program back. And that's where I think he is. Everybody was patting him on the back when he won 4 games.
In the second half of year 1.
Yeah, nobody's holding anybody responsible for anything negative in year 1. Year 2, I thought he should have started Burrows off the hop. May have been able to win a couple more games.
Was that solely a Gus decision? Because that seemed to be an organizational mindset.
I think if they would have fought for it, he would have gotten support for that.
It certainly happened a lot quicker than publicly stated they intended it to.
Well, I think privately they thought that it would probably be week 7 or 8 or 9 of the last year. That if they could get Henny to get him through half the season being functional, they could move to Blake then after the bye. The only reason he would have sat out all of his rookie year is if they had a winning record, which wasn't going to happen. So, I think taking some of the heat off of Gus is you know, nice of them to do, but I think you have to hold the head coach to a higher standard.
Well, look, it doesn't mean you couldn't see a change in the head coach after this year if, say, he goes 7-9, because you could still judge him on a two-year window. I mean, Lovie Smith just got judged on a two-year window, right? Yeah, there are plenty of coaches that only get a couple years. Mike Mularkey got one here in Jacksonville, so it wouldn't be unprecedented, even if you said, all right, let's throw those out, is 5-11 and whatever they do in 2016 worthy of retaining his job.
Yeah, and Mike was probably collateral damage because they changed the GM. But I think what Dave was opening the door to was he doesn't have to go 9-7 next year. He doesn't have to, you know.
That's what I thought too, because immediately when I heard that, I thought back to what you said last week. I think it was last week when I asked you, what kind of record does Gus need to feel secure that he's going to get more beyond 2016? And you immediately said 8-8, and I thought, that's insane. To me it is, because I thought that you should look at this year as you failed to reach 8-8, which was entirely doable and should have been done, and it was an underachievement. So to me, I'm starting to count from like a 7 or 8 win total that you need to improve from, in my mind.
Well, it's like Dave brought up this example during the press conference. Let's say you go into the last game of the season at 7-8, you're playing for a division title, and you lose the game. Does that mean everybody's fired? I would say probably not. But that you never heard them say the last 3 days, quote, we underachieved. They said we're disappointed, but I mean, did they think this was a 8-win team?
They certainly underachieved.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, they
underachieved. They didn't necessarily underachieve, at least according to my expectations. I picked them to win 6 games. You win 5, you win 6. That's within, you know, the margin of error. But if you had told me it would play out with the teams they were playing, the records they would have, the injury issues that they would have, I would have set that bar a lot higher going into the season. All right, so I'm with you. I was surprised at that. Tony, not so much. You think that that's kind of what Caldwell's point of view has been since last year on the first couple years.
Yeah, I really do. I don't think the story is changing much. I do agree with you, Ryan, that it is him publicly basically trying to back up his coach who's going to be here for another year. I do think that's what he was doing in that press conference, but I don't think it's because the way he's looking at it has changed. Again, like I said yesterday, I think it's more of them revealing behind the curtain the way that they're talking about these things behind the scenes and giving the fans a bit more of a glimpse of what exactly that is. I don't think it's disingenuous at all.
I think
I think it's right, but I don't think it's disingenuous.
And I agree with that too, but I think that it does show us that probably Gus was never in, if that's truly how he feels, Gus is never in as much danger as the public perception was. Fair to say?
Yeah, yes. And what would have been interesting is, okay, what would have happened if they did go 0-6 after that?
Didn't have the 51-point victory.
Yeah, I think that it made the decision a lot easier.
Yeah, you said it at the time. You said, that's it. Gus is safe, no matter what happens the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they went 0-3.
Yeah, it got ugly
the rest of the way. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We will come back. Wanted to get to that, but we will come back. And if you're on the line, we'll get to your phone calls. And we'll also hear from Gus Bradley what he had to say about the decision to get rid of Bob Babich and look for a different direction at the defensive coordinator spot for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Live at EverBank, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, you think as we put this together, you know, we'll have a better idea about that. Multiple scenarios that could take place. So definitely a strong possibility that the coordinator could call plays.
Gus Bradley, conference calling it yesterday. Strong possibility. You think it's a likelihood, right?
This one song.
Name that
is
tune.
Is this Cedarita?
What is it, Tyler? Name of that?
This would be his smash hit, Like I Love You.
Like I Love You. You struck out on that one.
It's a good song.
It's all right. Here, I'll still take you and JT trivia over me, or Tony, or Tyler.
So, multiple scenarios, which we've talked about.
Yeah, we've gone through.
He's acknowledged the scenarios.
Right.
That there are multiple ones.
So, we're closer to really knowing which one he's leaning toward.
Whereas last year, he was pretty adamant, Gus was, in his offensive coordinator search, I want a guy who's called plays for it, and I want a guy who's coached quarterbacks.
Right.
So, he's not laying out those things, those requirements in terms of calling experience.
Do you think he has a preference, and he just wants to see what's available? Or do you think he's not sure which way he wants to go, and he's going to, against, kind of see what's available and see what makes the most sense.
Well, I think he has a list in his head. Okay, I definitely want to talk to these guys because I think they'll be a good fit. Now, can I get them to come here? Last year on offense, the list that I think he had when the process started changed drastically because a couple guys got blocked. So, you know, this time around, I think he's going to be more aware of that and get that thing out of the way first. He's not. I don't think he's going to wait for a guy on a playoff team because I think he's going to get through third parties. Okay, they're not going to let you talk to him. So, okay, move on and don't get to the Senior Bowl before making this hire. So I think he's probably five or six guys in mind, and, you know, we'll see who brings in.
Knowing it's not all one or the other, it's a mix of the two, right? But the defense the last couple of years, especially the last half of this season where it really let him down here in 2015, is that more on the coaches, the scheme, the players? Like, how do you divvy up the blame for what it was in 2015?
I probably put it on, you know, players first, scheme, you know, and then scheme and coaching a close second. But interesting you bring up that is because Gus was talking about it on Monday was, you know, players have to trust the scheme, you know, and this and that and rise above coach speak. And I looked at it and I asked the question, I said, does that mean there was a disconnect between what the players were supposed to be doing and what the coaches wanted them to do? He acknowledged, well, that's probably how it sounded, but he put it on the players. Because he basically laid out a scenario where, okay, I know this is your rule on this play to play this technique, but when the offense adjusts, you have to adjust in the middle of the play, or right before the play happens. So to me, it's like he put it on them saying, you've been in this system for 3 years. You should know this backward and frontward. You should know when to stray from the discipline.
But
so,
the fact that they don't.
To me, that means are they not being coached enough?
Right, they're being coached properly.
And so, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why he's bringing in a new guy is they kept making the same mistakes over and over again, especially on the linebackers and DBs.
Oh, we got some on the line here, so let's get to them at 641-1010. Going to Vic on the south side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Vic.
Good morning. I'm interested in the discussion about the defense. I think I have observed a real contrast between what has happened with the offense and defense in terms of coaching. You know, Olsen and Sullivan have really improved the game of Blake and the two Allens, and I just don't see that the defense is receiving the same kind of coaching. And I think it may be that old cliche. It may be more about the Jimmys and Joes and the X's and O's. I know the scheme is important, but I think those guys on the defense need someone who can really coach them up, so to speak. And for that reason, I'd rather see Gus stay as the head coach and get somebody in here that is a real hands-on coach for the defense.
All right, Vic.
I think that's the route he's going to go. And you're right, Vic, in terms of I think they need an experienced hand or two on defense, on the coaching staff, because you look on offense, Greg Olsen's been around, Jerry Sullivan's been around a long time, so they have that knowledge. And, you know, next time I talk to Gus, one thing I'll bring up is, okay, probably not as a coordinator, but do you consider bringing in Imani Kiffin to help the coordinator along, who has seen everything in this game and won't have the pressure of, you know, leading a defensive staff, but can focus on, let's say,
as an advisor capacity,
full time, like a okay. Like a Tom Moore,
okay,
senior defensive assistant or something. You're here every day, but okay, you're specifically your third down this week. Okay, next week you're red zone, that kind of thing. Where and just a guy to bounce ideas off of. I think that would be something they should consider as well.
Vic, thank you for the call. Let us go to Isaiah checking in from Ohio. It's been a while, Isaiah. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Good. Thanks.
I had a question. Do you think when it comes to, like, draft or free agency, like, cornerbacks can be highly pursued? The cornerbacks only had three interceptions, and they all came on Devon House, in which the secondary played really bad down the stretch, you know, giving up big plays.
Sure.
Is he saying prioritize those spots?
Well, he's saying how much priority specifically is cornerback going to be, in your opinion?
Well, I think it is a priority. I think they need to go get a veteran guy, do that, then look at free safety in the draft.
Both
in free agency.
If you get a great house this year, 1 to 100, 100 being a perfect Pro Bowl player, 0, 1 being absolute garbage.
I'd probably give him like a 73.
Which is not a bad grade. It's not the same as like getting a D in school, right?
Yeah. And he started out a little slow. The benching may have woke him up. But the last half of the season, I thought he was pretty good. I mean, you don't break up 23 passes unless you're getting beat a lot. And one thing that's interesting, and it's something I will want to pursue.
You don't break up 23 passes unless you're getting beat a lot, or you're getting thrown out.
You're getting thrown out a lot, but also, it's not like he gave up 15 touchdowns.
Right.
So he won his share of things, too. The interesting part about this Jaguar approach in free agency is they always want to say they're signing ascending players who may not have been starters. I think they got to change that because Devon House started slow, first time being an every down starter. Jeremy Parnell started slow.
Sergio Brown
never got started. Right. So I think you have to spend a little bit more money to go after guys who are established starters, because you can't afford a 1-5 start anymore.
Yeah, that's why I like Jenkins. Jaurus Jenkins is a guy that I think it could be a playmaker.
And that's why Audric was pretty good from start to finish. He's used to playing
quite a lot of football, right? Yeah. That's why, if they don't go the Eric Berry route, how interested are you in Eric Weddle, who had a down year by his standards, but I don't know how much was a result of the dysfunction between he and the team and how much his play fell off this year?
That would to me, that would go in the Hail Mary range. And if you're Weddle, you're probably going to have better options than the Jags. It would be a complete 180 in terms of their philosophy, which at this point I would embrace a 180 because what you're doing hasn't really worked yet at that position. So I think it would be an easy sell for the Jaguar fan. It would be an easy sell to bring him aboard. I think selling Weddle on coming here is going to be tougher.
What about another name, different position that's been brought up a lot in recent days, Mario Williams, right? We understand the circumstances. The guy had been a dominant pass rusher in 4-3 and 3-4 schemes. He doesn't fit the mold of a Leo, but this year, though.
And I'm pretty sure you were on board with them trying to at least talk to Ndamukong Suh last year, too, and he doesn't really fill any specific role in this defense either.
So, but this year, in terms of Williams, at least one of his teammates said he quit on the team. Anonymously said it after the last game of the season, said he got mailed in since he didn't like his role with the team. Given everything included, would you be interested in Mario Williams?
I would, because in a 4-3 scheme, he's been productive.
Proven.
His whole career. So if he gets released and he becomes a free agent, I would be proactive in terms of the Jaguars, because if he gets cut, you can start talking to him right now.
Oh, you're right about that.
Before the market opens, so you can almost get him done before real free agency starts. So that would create some momentum. Hypothetically, let's say you have Amari Williams in the fold. If I'm another guy on defense that's out there saying, and these guys mean business.
Now, Mario Williams has had his ups and downs in his career. Okay, second year in the league, he had 14 sacks. Then he had 12 in 2008, made the Pro Bowl. He made the Pro Bowl with 9 sacks the next year. Then he was 8.5. Then he was 5. So he was on a descending track, but now that he had the 5 because he was injured. He only played in 5 games that year, so that's actually very
productive. When did they switch
productive.
To the 3-4 out of the 4-3?
Houston?
Yeah.
Or Houston.
Didn't they do that to him? He was an outside linebacker.
Was
I thought,
he
for them.
One year it in, looks like, in Houston? Was he an outside linebacker?
I thought he played standing up a lot one year.
They do.
Well,
they did
Pro
list
Football
him as
reference,
yeah.
One year as a linebacker.
Right, in 2011. But he also played in a 3-4 in Buffalo, didn't he, when he first got there?
I think it was a 4-3 under Schwartz last year.
Last year, right.
And then Rex came in and brought a 3-4.
Oh, was it? They flipped it? Okay.
Yeah. But in terms of Mario, he turns 31 later this month. That's usually a red flag for this regime. But I like his durability. He's only missed, 10 games in 10 years?
Right, and most of that was in 2011. Yeah. And the 3 years prior to this one, 10.5, 13, 14.5 sacks.
To me, I'd be interested because I look at those 3 years, and I look at this year saying, okay, he was probably playing out of position. He was playing a defense to which he didn't sign up for.
Right.
The fact that he was rumored to quit, that does bother me, but I think it's worth a call.
We heard early in the season that he was unhappy, and he spoke publicly about dropping into coverage way too much. You know, that that's not what I'm supposed to be used for.
And he's right.
Right, which reminds me of the Jaguars signing Bryce Paul back in the day and bringing him in here and asking him to do similar things, which is not the way he had been used when he won Defensive Player of the Year. So, all right, just another name to keep an eye on out there. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010, the fan feedback question of the day today asks you, should Gus Bradley take over the defensive play calling duties himself? Should he hire a defensive coordinator from outside? What is your approach? What do you think Gus's best approach would be? Whether or not you think he's going to do that, what would you advise Gus Bradley to do in terms of handling the defensive coordinator responsibilities? We'll get your feedback coming up in a moment. Also, to note, Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net, will join us tomorrow at about 11 a.m. So we'll get our first look at some of the top prospects in the draft and comparing guys like Bosa and Jalen Ramsey and Laremy Tunsil and others that may be on the Jags radar, not only in the first round, maybe go a little bit deeper as well, see which positions he deems to be the deepest in this draft, and can the Jags find defensive help even later throughout the draft this year. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. We're live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mama, listen. Name that tune. JT fan you are.
Well, I know it's from Future Sex Love Sounds, but go ahead. What is it, Tyler?
Senorita, the first word of the song.
The one you guessed last time.
Well, I didn't have my headphones on.
Oh,
I guessed that one. I didn't want to guess the same one twice.
All right. Fine. There you go. You got your old JT all the time. Don't get used to it, pal. All right? If you're not going to go 4 for 4 on naming the tune...
Well, he could play, like, Rock Your Body. I mean, anybody get that.
Of course. I mean, we are all hoping he would, but we'll have to be left with what we had. All right, let's get a call or two in, and we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight today. 641-1010 is the phone number, also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line number. Let us go to Jim calling in from Tampa with a question for Ryan O'Halloran. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, guys. Ryan, Tony and Mike touched on it yesterday. Stan Kroenke's nice little comments about the city of St. Louis and everything else. Does he have the votes to move on? Because I can't believe he would actually say that in his presentation if he didn't have the votes, because that guy's not going to be able to walk around the city of St. Louis. I mean, just out of curiosity.
I think he has the votes, or else it wouldn't come to this. I think the issue for the owners is do they vote? Do they approve two teams going there next year?
Yeah, I don't think he has the votes. And I'll tell you what, because I think if he had the votes, he wouldn't need to do this. Right, you don't need to poison the well. I think he's trying to make it such a poison situation that they're going to say, well, it's untenable to leave him in St. Louis, and he's trying to force the votes his way. I don't think he does. I think if he felt like he really had the votes, why does he have to say boo? Right, if they're going to back him moving to L.A., there's no need to trash St. Louis on the way out. That's my guess. But
do you think the Chargers have the votes?
I don't know if any of them have the votes, quite frankly.
Because, I mean, the owners, it's going to be – will enough owners pull the trigger?
Somebody's going to L.A., I think, this year. I don't think it's going to be – I don't think they're going to wait a whole nother year on this process. Somebody, maybe two teams, will be playing in L.A. this year, and they may get to a point where they say, look, who, you know, we got – people need to compromise here. We need to get this done, and there's going to be arm twisting and deals made behind closed doors and – I don't know. I don't know which ones it's going to be. I mean, I think Kroenke is just kooky enough to try to move without approval because some people think that legally the NFL really can't stop him from doing it if he wants to.
And Jerry Jones planted that seed probably in the last year when saying, what's keeping him? He can just move it.
Right.
You know, he can be a rogue owner.
Right.
So that would be fascinating.
It would be. All right. Thank you for the call, Jim. Let's get
the new Al Davis.
Yeah, right. I mean, we haven't had one. Mark Davis doesn't really rise to that level right now. Let's get Ron on the north side next in here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. Is Gus a diehard 4-3 guy on the defense, or is it possibility we can go to the 3-4. The other question I had was, at what point, because I've seen this in the past, at what point do we realize that a coach is not a head coach, but he's a great coordinator? And I'll take the answers off the air. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
If the Jaguars switch to a 3-4, it means they have a new head coach, most likely. So
he is a believer in this
in 4-3.
Version of the 4-3 that he
and
runs.
And then you look around the league, you see coordinators get shots to be head coaches. This not very good at it. Yep. They go back, but we're not there yet because he's still here.
People thought I was crazy for bringing this up. I bring this up as way of comparison. Right? There was a point in the 90s where the Cleveland Browns felt Bill Belichick was not qualified to be their head coach. And people pointed out on Twitter, he had a much better record than Gus Bradley has. My point was, isn't always successful the first time around. And you know, because a caller had called up on the postgame show and said, we know Gus is never going to be a good head coach. And I don't think you know that. You may feel that way, and you may be right. But I don't think you can completely dismiss that out of hand when you factor in all the circumstances. I'm not giving him a free pass, okay? And Tony and I have said, if it were us, without knowing what Shad Khan may have promised in terms of patience, I would have had a hard time keeping a coach who won 12 games in 3 years. Mm-hmm. That being said, my point was to say, yeah, okay, Bill Belichick may have had more success with Cleveland than some other coaches, but after 4 years, they said, not good enough, not going to get us where we want. And then he kicked around for a few more years, got his next opportunity, found the quarterback, which is a huge part of it, or stumbled into the quarterback, however you want to look at it. And then the rest is history. So I don't know if we know definitively. I mean, some guys turn out to have better careers as coordinators and failed as head coaches, but maybe had they been put in the right situation, they wouldn't have. I don't think there's a moment in time when you say this guy's never going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. At least I'm not at that point with Gus Bradley.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's, I mean, a lot of examples go either way. You know, but,
oh, sure.
Well, I mean, We could find out about him a month in the next season.
We could. Well, now, that's interesting you say that. Okay. Shad Khan says expectation levels are going to rise significantly, right? He knows what that means, right? Exactly what that means. And he may not even know specifically 10 wins, 9 wins. It may be a I'll know it when I see it kind of situation. Gus Bradley starts 1-5 next year, Ryan. Is there any consideration in your mind that Dave Caldwell would put an in-season switch, or do you think that this is year four for Gus Bradley to ride it out and the evaluation will come at the end of December?
Most likely it would come at the end of December because, you know, 1-5, injuries, schedule, let's say they're playing good on defense and can't earn an offensive slump. So a lot of variables there. You know, the ideal thing for Gus is start 5-2 and sign an extension.
Right. Right. So, do you think they would do that quickly? I guess there's no way to know.
I think they would.
Yeah?
Even if they add 2 years.
Right.
You know, and then after the season, because let's say this team, no matter what this team's record is after 7 weeks, the questions are going to be, do you think you're helping your stock? Or are you concerned that you're not going to be re-signed.
Is the seat too hot?
Yeah.
If
you're 5-2, it's why aren't you getting an extension? If it's 3-4 and you've played good football, it's going to be, are you still concerned that this may not be enough?
I guess I'd be worried, what if they go 5-2, you give them a contract extension and they go in the tank?
There's that. Look what happened. Look what happened on Sunday when they knew their head coach was coming back, right? And they laid down.
I mean, what do you make of that? Do you read anything into that? I mean,
this past week?
Yeah.
Everything. I read everything into it.
Meaning what?
If I'm a player that's going to be back next year, I know my head coach, who I generally like. I know he's coming back. On defense, you probably know you're going to be working for a new coordinator. I'm keeping my feet moving and make sure I'm not getting hurt.
Yeah, you think that was largely in play?
They missed 21 tackles.
I hear you, but they've had those games before.
Yeah, this was a season high for missed tackles, and it just was a lot of guys who were hitting high.
Gotcha. All right.
Nature to think that way, too.
Let me get Leo in Mandarin, then we'll get a few comments from the fan feedback spotlight today. Leo, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks a lot, man. Listen, I just want to make a couple comments. I'm going to ask you a question, okay? I'm not trying to rip anybody here or anything, okay? Because I really do. I would hope that Gus Bradley would have the type of season Carolina had this year. Not realistic to think. I really do hope that for him or wish that for him. But that front line on that paper just bothered me a little bit. I appreciate how they're all on the same page together. but how it's easier to fix the defense. It just kind of insults my intelligence a little bit. I know what they're trying to say, but it just kind of slaps me in the face. I had a draft question real quick before I go. I told Tyler I'd be brief. One, Tunsil, I'm telling you something. I know I'm in the minority. I'd move up if I'm Jacksonville to get that guy. I don't care if you get him and you spend everything else in the draft and your free agency on your defense. Okay? It's just so easy to fix the defense. That's easy. We can fix that. Okay. Tunsil is somebody that, yeah, I believe Tennessee may get him. And you got to think about J.J. Watt. That's who scares me tonight. Merciless. Guys like that. I know Bosa, probably pretty good like everybody thinks. I'm going after Tunsil because that's a rare find. And, yeah, these left tackles aren't like what they used to be anymore. So, if I'm Jacksonville, yeah, I'd even probably try to move up to get a guy. One question, what's the difference between Alexander and Ramsey? And I'll take the comments off the air.
3 inches of height, for one. I think that's part of it. I mean, Alexander, the cornerback from Clemson, is a very good player.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him.
Absolutely. Doesn't have the prototypical size that you'd want. I mean, Jalen Ramsey's a physical freak. You can't coach his size-speed combination that he's got. Alexander's an excellent player. He may turn out to be the better player. I'm not saying he's not. If they evaluate it and say, wow, this guy's a better player, he better turn out to be because, Jalen Ramsey is right now universally seen as a kind of a top-five talent. I would not move up to get Laremy Tunsil.
No, and that's not this regime's MO.
No, and they have – and it may be – and I do think – look, we'll find out if it's easier to fix the defense, but I do think – finding a quarterback, especially if you're building an offense around a brand new quarterback, it's one thing maybe if you have Drew Brees in place. Hey, we're going to build the offense. Yeah, go sign a bunch of wide receivers. Okay, it's fixed, right, because you have Drew Brees. So I can understand the point of view that the offense takes more time. It's more difficult to do because it's timing. It's all these different things that have to work in much more synchronicity than they do on the defensive side of the football. You can have a bunch of guys mess up on defense and one guy save everybody and bail them out. It doesn't usually work that way on offense. Usually if it's one guy screwing up, you're in a lot of trouble on offense. So I can get that. I'm not saying that maybe Dave Caldwell made it seem like it's going to be a snap of the finger. I don't think that was his intention. But we'll find out. I mean, he's got the opportunity, and he's obviously going to concentrate heavily on that side of the ball this all season. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today. What should Gus do in terms of calling the plays himself, elevating from within for defensive coordinator, looking for somebody from without and turning it completely over to them? What kind of feedback?
Here's what we got from Eric. I've always believed in letting coordinators call plays with the head coach's overall scheme in mind. From Daniel, hire a coordinator and let him call plays. The head coach has to trust his next line of leaders. From Duval Doom, depends on the hire. If they're sticking with scheme, then Gus should call it. If they're changing, no. From Bobby, promote from within and assist however he sees fit. But I do like Al Holcomb and Rocky Seato out there in Seattle. And Lars, no, Gus should be focused on the entire team, and they should hire a new coordinator with fresh ideas.
All right, there you have it. I think Ryan, all the tea leaves seem to indicate that Gus is going to abdicate the play calling to somebody else, at least to start the season. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I think, like you said, he's probably got a list of guys looking outside. I think promoting from within is probably a bit of a last resort. Not that Todd Wash or somebody else wouldn't be capable of doing the job, but I don't know if you go down with potentially your last shot with a guy who's never been a play caller.
And if that was plan A, then we'd be having a press conference.
Right, because you wouldn't need to
–
Right.
Waste your time.
Exactly. So we'll find out how it all plays out. In the meantime, what do you got coming up this weekend at the TU?
Tomorrow's paper, we have a beat writers roundtable with myself, Hayes and Vito. We each answered 7 questions looking back and looking forward. So I think that was turned out well. Then in Sunday's paper, I'll have my massive statistical wrap-up, missed tackles, sacks allowed.
Is it all bad? Is there any good in there?
Mr. Negative, but I try to even it out. Red zone.
Richard Cranium over here.
Yeah, so,
Richard Cranium the second.
So we'll even that out. We'll try to do that. So that'll be in Sunday's paper. And my wild card winners.
Yes, well, because Tony and I will do these tomorrow. Who do you have?
Okay, I got early game. I got Houston beating Kansas City.
You do, okay.
Because I think their pass rush will be the difference. in the late game. I'm going to go with the home team against Cincinnati. I think they're going to like rally a little bit. Sunday, I'm going to go with both road teams, Seattle over Minnesota, even though it's going to be frigidly cold in Minnesota. And then I'm going to go Green Bay over Washington, Redskins in the second game.
I'm leaning against you in three out of those four right now, but we'll discuss those tomorrow. And one aspect that I think is interesting, because we're not hearing this storyline this week, if Andy Dalton's playing this week, if he was just starting, he wasn't hurt, all you'd be hearing about is, can Andy Dalton get over the hump? Can Andy Dalton get over the hump? A.J. McCarron's got all the cockiness in the world. He doesn't question whether he can get over the hump. And I just wonder if that doesn't benefit Cincinnati just to not have to deal with, even though that Marvin Lewis is 0-6 in the postseason, that's not the narrative. It's about Andy Dalton and can he take the next step to be an elite quarterback winning in the postseason? Well, he's not going to play. Yeah. So it's become a non-issue this week, and I think that's kind of interesting. So we'll see how it goes. Ryan, good stuff, man.
All right. See you next week.
All right, buddy. There he goes. Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. And read him in the pages of the Florida Times Union covering your Jacksonville Jaguars. By the way, Sam Mitchell on Twitter says, if we don't get the FSU kicker, I'm done. Good seeing you. Good knowing you, Sam. I don't see that happening.
No.
For the Jags. They're a Jason Myers team right now is the way it appears. All right, that'll do it for us, for Fat Tony, for Ryan O'Halloran, for Tyler Devitt, and for Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars Today, XL Primetime, straight ahead on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field,